Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good news and bad news for Nick Sirianni. Which do you want first?
I'm always a bad news guy first.
Well, I'll go with the good news just to start. He's going to get his opportunity to talk with Jeffrey Lurie. One-on-one. Now the bad news. Matt Cotrillo is going to be in the room. All right, so it's just, it's a big issue. It's a big issue. Let's see. NFL wild card weekend. Let's bring it home here. Texans-Ravens, 4:30 on ESPN ABC on Saturday. Houston has Adrian Amos, Juice Scruggs, and those two there. Meanwhile, for the Ravens, they have Dan Chisena, Adafe Owe, and Jordan Stout. 8:15 on Fox Saturday night, Green Bay, San Francisco, and Santa Clara. Sean Clifford and Rasheed Walker for the Packers. Jair Brown, Kevin Givens for the Niners. Sunday, 3 o'clock, NBC. Tampa Bay at Detroit. Chris Godwin for the Bucs and Jason Kabinda for Detroit. Kansas City will be the 6:30 game on Sunday on CBS. At Buffalo, Donovan Smith for the Chiefs. And for the Bills, they have Ryan Bates, Daquan Jones, and Connor McGovern. Which means that you are assured of having a Penn Stater on each team in the Super Bowl this year. That's what it means. So there you are. Just wanted to bring it home locally for everybody as to guys to watch for. Because they're all over the place in this thing. Adrian Amos had a tackle in the playoff game with the Browns. Ryan Bates was on special teams for the Bills. Nick Bowers was in the practice squad for the Dolphins, the old tight end. Jair Brown, of course, will get his first action this weekend. He's going to play. Jason Kabinda, you saw him on special teams and also on short yardage as the fullback for Detroit. Dan Chisena is on the practice squad. Sean Clifford actually got three snaps in the win over the Cowboys. Pat Freiermuth, 5 catches, 76 yards for the Steelers. Kevin Givens, of course, they'll play this weekend. Chris Godwin had 4 catches, 45 yards on a touchdown for Tampa Bay. Daquan Jones, assistant on 2 tackles. He's in the starting lineup for the Bills. Connor McGovern, of course, started for Buffalo at guard. Adafe Owe plays this weekend. Micah Parsons, 2 tackles, 1 solo for the Cowboys. Joey Porter Jr., 2 solo tackles for the Steelers. Allen Robinson, 2 catches, 12 yards for the Steelers. Juice Scruggs, he started, right? Played every snap for the Texans. Brandon Smith on the Eagles practice squad. Donovan Smith started, played every snap for the Chiefs in their frozen tundra win over Miami. Jordan Stout will punt this weekend, and Rasheed Walker started and played every snap for the Packers in their win over the Cowboys. So a lot of Penn State players out there playing in the postseason. We have, what, Ben Jones today?
Yep, 135.
135, very nice. We'll talk with him, get into some of the financials on Penn State athletics with him, get his thoughts also on transfer portal, Justin Ludwig being, or Justin Lustig, excuse me, being named to the special teams job at Penn State. Justin Lustig brings with him a glowing resume. I really don't know much about him except what the resume says. A lot of times I'll know something about somebody. I mean, I actually knew a lot about Tom Allen before he came here. I knew actually a lot about Andy Koltynicki until he got here. Justin, I don't. I'm not going to sit there and pretend that I'm watching Syracuse and Vanderbilt special teams. You know, it's just, oh well. So, 135 with Ben Jones today and get his thoughts on all of that and more. And, yeah. Let's see. Any coaches fired or hired today? Looking around. I know a second interview, by the way, for Bill Belichick for the Falcons. Second interview. Okay. And the suit is all excited because Reba McEntire is singing the national anthem.
I thought he'd be more excited Post Malone was doing America the Beautiful.
I mean, now, this year, I will not watch any of the pregame show, not because I don't want to watch it, because actually I don't. Everybody knows I don't watch the pregame shows. Rarely watch much of the postgame. I just want to watch the game. That's just me. If you want to watch it and love it, go for it. Right? That's why it's on there, so you can watch it if you want. But this year, even if I wanted to, my odds are very long of seeing any of it. In fact, my odds are going to be interesting in terms of getting back for kickoff because I've got a game at Northwestern that day at 1 o'clock Eastern time. So we would be done game at 3, off the air at 3:30 on the bus. This is Eastern time. On the bus by probably 4. It's a good 45-minute trip out there. Go through security at 5. I mean, I probably would be landing if everything went right. Landing right when the game's kicking off, so I'll probably have to listen to some of it on the radio as I drive home.
The Big Ten schedule makers schedule games for Super Bowl Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, well, no, I would. Yeah. I would.
I guess usually early.
Right, yeah. I mean, I would do that. I would schedule games that way. I have no issue with that. To be honest with you, Todd, I have no issue with that. If I'm the Big Ten, it's smart. That's a dead period.
Yeah.
You might as well try and take advantage of it. Put a game in there instead of having, like, you know, the 18th feature on how Brock Purdy overcame being the last pick in the draft. I mean, okay, I got it. Okay. Yeah.
Brock Purdy was the last pick in the draft? I had no idea.
Yeah, nobody knew. How did he overcome that? Wow, holy mackerel. It's all part of the, as the suit would say, the storyline. Like going, oh, no, I don't care about the storyline. Just tell me, but let's play the game.
Well, there's a week again between the Super Bowl, too, so it's not like we're not going to be inundated that whole 2 weeks about it, too.
Yeah, but I ignore all that stuff. And it doesn't interest me. And I've covered Super Bowl Media Day before. I've been there. The purpose of going there is I was working at WPSU TV at the time, Channel 3, and we had the football basketball contract. So the goal with it, the Broncos didn't have anybody on the team with Penn State roots, but Seattle had Michael Robinson and they had Jordan Hill. And ironically, like I've got a game Saturday at Ohio State, and you know how cold it is this week. So they sent us to go to New Jersey because that was the game that was played at MetLife Stadium. And a lot of times over the years, they've had media day inside the stadium, but not this case. This time, they put it at the Prudential Center where the Devils play. And I remember being out there, and it was 9 degrees, and I'm waiting in a line to go in. And we're waiting and waiting, and like, you know, you know, you've got the gloves on, you've got the wool hat on, you've got, like, you're bundled. And they said, hey, we need to shift the line. We have to go all the way around to the other side. They said, we need to shift it. There was some logistical reason why they had to shift it. When we finally get in there, and of course, when you're in there, have you ever covered one, Todd?
No. Okay. No, I have not.
When you're in there, it's just a mass of people on the floor. And there are interesting characters out there. There's a lot of great media out there covering. You know, I ran into and talked to Peter King for a little bit when I was there. Kim Jones was there. Talked to her for a while. And you go around and you get what you need. So, I mean, Jordan was in a position with Seattle, Jordan Hill, where he was in what we call the bullpen. There's a group of maybe, you know, 10 to 15 guys there. Other guys had their own individual booth, and Michael Robinson had one of the individual booths. And I remember when I was done with Mike, and I've told this story before, people have heard it, but he and I are just chit-chatting about whatever, right? And all of a sudden, this guy walks up with a cameraman. He says, I want to ask some questions. And I look over, it's Hank Azaria. Right? I'm thinking, wow, Mo from Mo's Tavern is going to ask questions. All right. but it's a... You really can't... You can get some one-on-one stuff like that. Now, with the prime people, you can't. You know, you could, you know, you can get near Peyton Manning and you can ask him some questions. You could get near Russell Wilson and ask some questions if you wanted. John Fox was the Denver coach at the time. Pete Carroll, Richard Sherman. Now, Rich Sherman, I was able to. Sherman, very smart, thoughtful guy. But it's such a cluster bomb. And you have a mix of great media, and they have also mixed in people just shouldn't be there. Okay? As you know, you know, there's always a lot of sideshow stuff that goes on. Like, okay. You know, like, why is Hank Azaria there? I'm like, okay. All right. I got it. It's the Super Bowl. It's a big deal. And you know what? You don't mind it. I don't mind. It didn't bother me. Okay? Because I knew what to expect. But the funny part was when Marshawn Lynch came out. And this was the year before he did the I'm only here because I don't want to get fined. Well, you have 1 hour. And I was talking with Michael Robinson. You know, and his booth was like three or four from the end. And it's the entranceway for the teams. Lynch comes out with about 5-6 minutes to go in the media session and stands on the concrete where the hockey rink would be, okay, because they had the boards up and everything. Stands on there about maybe a foot to 18 inches. So now he is, quote, legally in. And they go in a swarm to get him. And so Mike and I are looking over at him, and I said, well, I said, you know him better than anybody. I said, what are the odds he says it? He goes, oh, Steve, he's not going to say a word. He said, and the thing is, he says, he'd be really great at it. I said, really? He says, no. He says, he's outgoing, he's entertaining. He says, but I think he was burned a couple times early in his career, and he never got over it. I said, oh, okay. All right. You know, insight from somebody that knows him. And Lynch said nothing. And he got fired at questions for 5-6 minutes, said nothing, turned around, and left. Well, he was technically there to answer questions. He didn't answer any of them. But he turned around and left. But it is an absolute, I mean, amazing the sea of humanity. And I remember Deion Sanders being there. And he was with NFL Network at the time. And during the break between Seattle and Denver, I think Seattle went first. They had lunch back in the Devils practice rink in the back of the building. And I remember standing there talking with Kim Jones and a couple of other people, you know, just chit-chatting. And Dion walks in, and all these cameras and microphones are following him en masse. And he went to sit down to eat, and he's sitting there answering questions. He had more media around him than Peyton Manning. Right? And it's amazing how he attracts. He has that personality, that charismatic personality that attracts people. I'll say this. He did something this week, though, that, look, you have to run your team and your program any way you want, but they did do something this week. I didn't quite. Did you hear about the fashion show in Paris?
I did. I did see the boys were over modeling.
Yeah, Shadur and Shiloh Sanders were both out there. I have no problem with them being there. It's an NIL opportunity, the whole deal. I have no problem with that. The problem was that they were there when Deion Sanders, the head coach, had called for a team meeting. Now, it's okay for any coach to excuse people along the way, but if you're a teammate of Shiloh and Shadur Sanders, what are you thinking as you're sitting in this mandatory team meeting and the sons of the head coach are off modeling in Paris? Like, you're sitting there like, going, what's going on here? What kind of system is this? And believe me, you're not allowed to be critical of it. I mean, if you're critical of it, forget it. Let's talk about what your job happens to be if you are critical of it. When's the quickest route to the transfer portal if you're critical of it, if you're on the team? But that's one of those, like, wait a minute. Why do they get a break and why do I have to be here?
Just from being around high school sports so much, I mean, that's the biggest concern out of high school coaches when their kids come up is, you know, treating their kids exactly how they treat everybody else so nobody thinks they're playing favoritism. And I think that's probably one of the things that's going to end up hurting him the most there is, you know, people might not be saying anything, his players might not be saying anything, but I'm sure they're taking notes about it.
Let's be honest. Of the top 10 players he has on that team, maybe even the top 5, his two sons are among them.
Yes.
Right? Shadur Sanders really showed me so much this past season. Throwing the ball, making, I thought, for the most part, good decisions, took a beating, especially in the UCLA game. Just kept getting up. I'm like going, this kid is tough physically and mentally. And I gave him a lot of credit for that because I had said on the show, and again, I'm never afraid ever to go back to something I've said in the show. If I'm wrong about it, that's why I go back and I'll talk about it sometimes. I remember saying he was a 3-star prospect coming out of school. He did fine at Jackson State. I expect him to play like a 3-star quarterback at this level. Well, he's better than that. You know, and he showed me over and over and over again he's better than that. When he has time, he makes plays. When he doesn't have time, guess what? Right? He has the ability to be tough enough physically and mentally to get through it. And I give him all the credit in the world. Now, Shiloh Sanders didn't know much about it. He's a good player. Now, he's not Travis Hunter, but he is a really good player. Good defensive back. So you do have two of the top 5 players on that team that are modeling in Paris for NIL money. But why not move the meeting? That's the part that got me. I didn't understand why, like, move the meeting at least where, like, okay, we're a team, I thought. I mean, you know, team means something, right?
I find it hard to believe Deion didn't know that they were going, so, yeah.
Oh, he knew.
Well, I was going to say, it does seem odd that he would schedule the meeting at the same time.
I mean, but it was scheduled for a long time. Yeah. Just move it. I mean, it's a simple fix. Just move it. Okay, when the whole team is here, we're going to do it. I excuse these guys to do this. The meeting is going to be, pick one, Friday. Okay. That's the part that it's like, that's why you go along and they got off to the great start and then they had lots of ups and downs. And you do have a question about management style when something like this comes up. Now the next part, I want to get down. The next guy I'm going to talk about is going to be Lane Kiffin. But I'm going to have to do that a little bit later in the show because Alabama, they are all over Tuscaloosa looking for guys who just might want to transfer in this 30-day window. Lane Kiffin was in Tuscaloosa last night. We'll talk about that later in the show. But coming up next, Ben Jones here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a terrific service department that backs it up, whether it's routine or difficult, they can handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Very pleased to bring in a guy that does a lot of great work, great respect for him as well, and that is BenJonesStateCollege.com. Ben, welcome back. It's so great to hear you again.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
So I want to start with the financial numbers that were put out. You took a long, hard look at it. Penn State brought in more money than ever, but it's also spent more in the athletic department. What was your general feel as to what you saw in the numbers?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. It reflects the notion these days that if you want to win, you're going to have to spend more. I think the idea that that winning is cheap, especially with inflation, that's not the case. And I think Penn State, you look across the board. I thought it was interesting. We talk a lot about the football numbers, the basketball numbers, some of those sports that are maybe top of mind for a lot more people. But you look at the money that Penn State spent on all of its other athletic areas, all of its different teams, it spent more money in that fiscal year across the board on each and every program. And I think, some years that's been the case for some programs, some years it hasn't been the case, but across the board, every program saw more money, and every program except for one, I believe, brought in more money. So, when you tell people that Penn State spent more money, I think the natural question is to say, well, where's the biggest area? And the answer is pretty much everywhere. I mean, some of the main numbers, you can look at Penn State football's recruiting budget effectively, not technically, but basically doubled in that year and continues to go up. We should assume to see the same thing the next time that report comes out in terms of its growth. So it's really across the board. Penn State's obviously always in the business of hiring more administrators and more people to sort of run the ship, if you will. So it's not just one thing, it's everything. And I think that's sort of the direction that the intercollegiate athletics, for better or for worse, is headed.
It also should be pointed out that this is the last report that they'll put out under the old TV contract. The next report will include the new numbers from the current TV contract, which is backloaded, by the way, but it's going to include those numbers. How interested are you to see the escalation there on the media side of it that can make a difference?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge difference. I think if you're Pat Kraft, that's one of the great advantages that you have right now, that there's no question that he has probably the most aggressive infrastructure agenda that, a Penn State administrator or athletic director has really had. But at the same time, he's also working with more money than anybody before him has ever had. I think the fact that media rights deal kicks in, it's a lot of money that you go, okay, how do we want to use this? What's the best way to use it? Because you look at last year's report, the previously released one, Penn State had about $10 million extra dollars in the budget. It's not really a profit-building circumstance. They're not putting that away to just sort of sit on it for forever. This year, it was a little over $100,000. But you add in all of that media rights money, It's a lot of things to work with, and you figure they're going to use it because you and I both know certainly the process of financing Beaver Stadium's renovation is going to come from a lot of different areas, but it ain't cheap, and everywhere that that money can come in that they can send towards that and all their other departments and all their other teams is more money to work with, and that's good news for Penn State as it tries to tackle this agenda.
In fact, it's not just the Fox, CBS, NBC money that will now be a part of the mix. They also have the new contract with Playfly that will kick in beginning on June 1st as well. So that's what I'm thinking. I'm interested in what the total picture looks like. And maybe some of the spending that was done this year was in anticipation that they knew they could back it up with revenue coming up.
Yeah, there's no question. I look forward to hearing how many times it takes you before you get Playfly coming out of your mouth the right way, other than Learfield. But I don't know what kind of NDAs you have to sign at this point to make sure that that doesn't happen. But in any case, I think there's no question that you've got to be strategic about how you spend their money. I think that's one of the interesting things when you look at these reports is there's a lot of information, but there's also sometimes there's not a ton of context, or you have to kind of dig into it to figure out what happened and why. But yeah, there's no question that some preemptive spending this year could be in part because things are coming down the pipe that aren't reflected into that report. There's no question that's definitely part of it. One of example is Penn State, it reports it's giving, but only when it's used in terms of money that comes in through philanthropy. So there's always stuff in the works that we just don't know about until it hits the books, and when it hits the books is very often much different than when the pledge was made.
So there's not going to be a drinking game if I say Learfield, is there?
Somebody somewhere will be drinking. I think there's no question about that. But as to why, I'll leave that up to them.
Yes, exactly right. We'll find out. One of them I usually look at is the wrestling numbers. And the only reason I look at the wrestling numbers is because of the great respect all of us have for the program, and they sell out all the time. And I think it's always the message to me is how difficult it is for an Olympic sport to make money if that one can't. I mean, because it's the platinum standard of sports. Do you take a good close at that one? I know you look at all of them, but how close do you look at that one?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right that it's a good example because I think a lot of people, when they talk about these numbers, and to answer a more immediate question, Penn State Wrestling made, I think it comes as no surprise, a lot of money last year in terms of the revenue that they brought in. But like you said, I think it's really a great example of how hard it is really for any athletic department across the country for these Olympic sports to be a cash positive endeavor. That it costs a lot to turn on the money at Rec Hall, it costs a lot of money to run the show, it costs a lot of money to travel, and obviously wrestling uniforms aren't exactly the most robust, but you've got to pay for equipment and things like that, and it has historically not been a cash positive venture. As you and I both know, it's pretty much just football and men's basketball, and that really just has to do with the fact that football is obviously its own thing. Men's basketball gets a lot of help from it's part of the media rights deal as well. And hockey has technically been a cash positive thing, but a lot of that has to do with the fact that they put the money for running Pegula in a different bucket in the budgetary things. But for all intents and purposes, it's not necessarily cash positive either. But yeah, wrestling is a great example. Sell out every duel, sell out every Jordan Center thing, sell out, everything they've got to sell. People will buy it. People will show up. It's great. And yet it's still a challenge to be cash positive, and I think that's part of the reason why Penn State football and its success is obviously so important, and why so many athletic departments across the country. It's not that they don't care about these other sports, it's just that there's really only one or two that are really paying for everything, and that usually comes down to football and basketball.
And again, based on their numbers, I mean, it was a minus 800,000 this year. And over two years, it's almost 2 million. And a lot of people find it hard to fathom that the platinum standard program that you can't find a ticket for is in that spot, but that tells you how important the media rights happen to be. It tells you how important the college football playoff distribution, how important that is. It tells you how important the NCAA men's basketball distribution happens to be. I mean, to me, that's what it outlines all, because the NCAA distribution, it's on the line there. It's right there as a line for wrestling. It's $49,000.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's an intricate puzzle. You know, I don't think that I have the brain power to try and unpack a tournament units and things like that that they hand out after the tournament to different conferences for the success that they have. But yeah, I mean, it's a difficult endeavor, and that's part of the reason why you've seen athletic departments across the country have to figure out how they're going to make it all work. And one of the reasons why Penn State's been so fortunate to be an athletic department that not only has as many programs as it does, but able to keep them. I think that's one of the things that's a different conversation altogether. But you look at some of the places like Alabama, Clemson, so those are two that come to mind off the top of my head, that they have significantly fewer athletic programs in total compared to Penn State. And when it comes to football, when it comes to facilities, when it comes to all of those things, you know, that money's got to go somewhere, and that's been you know, feeding a lot of these programs and making sure that they stay afloat. And that's always been a point of pride for Penn State, and probably something that always should be. But yeah, it's an intricate model. And you know, I remember telling Pat Chambers once, when we were one of the first times they shot fireworks off of Beaver Stadium, that went his entire recruiting budget. So it's a challenge out there to make it all work. And Penn State, to its credit, especially coming out of COVID-19, where that was hard for everybody, has figured a way to stand on both 2 feet.
All right, shifting gears, because it's great to have the opportunity to talk to you about such things. Penn State on football has had to replace all three coordinators along the way, with Stacy Collins ending up going to Boise State. Now Justin Lustig comes in to go with Andy Koltynicki, to go with Tom Allen. What's been your thought on the coordinators that were brought in, and what does it mean to a program when that happens?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question that, you know, Penn State was afforded a lot of consistency and continuity over the years, and that's just not how, you know, the world works anymore. I think if you're James Franklin, you go, did I get better? And, you know, obviously, you know, defensively, it's hard to imagine that Penn State defense could be better, and that was not really the charge there. I think to replace you know, Manny Diaz is just a matter of finding someone who can grab a hold of those things and keep it in place. I think Tom Allen is a sensible hire for that. I think Andy Koltynicki has done a great job his entire career of you know, making the most of what he's got, and I think that was really, you know, it's a different conversation, but I think one of Penn State's weaknesses this year was really in those big games going, so what exactly are we good at, and how do we make the most of that? And I think that that's really the charge now, is to do that and to answer that question. And I think, frankly, you know, I think Stacy Collins is a nice guy. He did a really good job this year from, you know, this special teams unit started out a little shaky and became, for the most part, really something that Penn State could lean on throughout the rest of the year. But I don't think a special teams is a sort of hire where you can really, like, read the headline and go, wow, I'm impressed. And I actually think that Penn State made a hire that you go, you read this guy's resume, you see what he has done, you see the fact that, you know, he's had that consistency throughout his career, you go, this is actually a good special teams hire. And I don't know how many times, and it's all due respect to special teams, because no one cares about it until they do, that I think that, you know, it says a lot about their ability to identify people that are going to fill their needs and do that. And, you know, special teams is important, and if you can hire somebody in all three phases of the game that makes you feel like you got better or at least stayed the same, I think that there's no question that change is not ideal for any program, but I think that's the end result you're looking for.
How did you view the transfer portal pickups by Penn State? And I know this is a wide-ranging question, but also the fact that Devon Ellis, Akeem Beeman, Sal Wormley, Nick Dawkins, Keandre Lambert-Smith also opted to come back. How do you view that total package there?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day that Penn State has staked its claim in the idea that the best way to do this is to keep guys, to develop them, to recruit them, and then go into the portal and find guys that might answer your needs. And I think that the portal for Penn State has really sort of bear the truth that picking a guy up doesn't mean he's going to solve your problems. I think we saw Mitchell Tinsley, great receiver, came right in, made a big impact on Penn State. Penn State would have loved to have had him this year. And then you look at Dante Cephas, who, you know, for whatever reason, for a lot of different reasons, it didn't pan out the same way. And I think they were both pretty similar guys in the portal in terms of people wanting them, in terms of where they came from, in terms of what we thought they were going to be able to do. And you got two very different sorts of results. So I think that you look again, Julian Fleming, There's no question that's a guy that, you know, Penn State has wanted for forever. It seems like, I think I made the joke that the recruiting department probably went into an old PDF file somewhere of Julian Fleming commitment things and then edited him to make him look older. That, you know, that's a good pickup. But I think what you need to learn from the portal is you don't know what you've got until they're playing games that matter. And I think for Penn State, when it comes to keeping guys that are known commodities, you know what you're going to get out of Hakeem Beamon. You know what you're going to get out of Devon Ellis. And I think that we know Keandre Lambert-Smith can be a better player than he was at times this year. So to me, you know, Lane Kiffin said it at one of the Peach Bowl press conferences that Penn State's one of the best programs at keeping guys out of the portal and really not having to shop there. And Ole Miss and Penn State have really been sort of opposite ends of that coin in terms of transfer portal acquisition. So to me, it's a good balance. And I think at the end of the day, the more guys that you can keep into your program for longer, the better off you're going to be. And Penn State was able to do that and then address some needs in the portal, and we'll just have to wait and see how they fit.
Yeah, in fact, Lane Kiffin was literally on the Alabama campus. You're allowed to do it. It's within the rules, but they have so many players in the portal. He was actually on campus wanting to talk with people. That aside, we'll get to that story in a little bit. Love talking basketball with you as well. You know your hoops as well as anybody. Penn State beat Wisconsin 87-83 on Tuesday night. Wisconsin came into the game ranked 11th. We all know it's been a roller coaster for this team to this point. What did you see that was a little different on Tuesday night?
Well, they made shots. I think that's, you know, the great joy about basketball is, you know, football can be this complex sport where you need a lot of things to go well, and sometimes it's just, you know, you don't have the physical aptitude to blow somebody off the line. Basketball, anybody can throw that thing up, and it's going to go in regardless of a lot of different factors. And I think Penn State finished well at the rim. I think it shot well. It shot its free throws well. I think that it got back to really what has been Penn State basketball's MO through all of these head coaches as of late is really, you know, maybe we're not more skilled than you, and that hasn't always been the case. Certainly recently, Penn State's been the better team. But independent of that, we're going to outwork you. And I think that we saw Penn State, a Penn State team that, to their credit, through the ups and downs, through the frustrations and whatnot, came out and said, look, maybe we're not the better shooting team, and they turned out to be the better shooting team, but we're going to at least win more of these 50-50 balls. We're going to find ways to create turnovers. Ace Baldwin is, you know, it changes every night, but at least in the top 10 in terms of steals per game, these guys are out there working hard. And, you know, there's been more than a few head coaches that have said the word attitude around that program, but I think attitude is certainly a good way to address or to sort of sum up what Penn State did well that night.
Let me ask you something. In your coverage of sports these days, football, basketball, what kind of role does analytics play in how you view sports today, if at all?
I mean, I think it's informative in a lot of ways because I think that the challenge is that I think sports makes you feel a lot of things in terms of, you know, I feel like this team is not good at X, Y, or Z. And I think analytics gives you the ability to say, is that true? And go and sort of dive into the nitty-gritty of does what I feel match the data. Now, I think that, you know, every coach and every player will tell you that, you know, you can have paralysis by analysis. You can, you know, there's tempo stats and all sorts of things that tell you X, Y, or Z about a team, and you don't really know what to do with that. But I think that it's a great tool at large to have to inform you of how do I feel and does that match the data. And for me, from the perspective of trying to tell people what I think happened and why it happened, I think it's really invaluable. But certainly I understand coaches and players that want to have not a safe distance, because I think it's a good tool, but a balance between, I think James Franklin has said that, what the numbers tell you and what your feel is in the moment of the game.
Ben, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for taking the time today. It's great to have you back on.
Yep, thanks for having me, Steve.
That's Ben Jones, statecollege.com. We'll come back with more. By the way, Penn State will play Saturday at noon at Ohio State. Network air times 11:30. There's a reason why I bring up the wrestling numbers all the time. And, of course, those who have an agenda will sit back and say, see, he's trying. No, I'm trying to point out how difficult it is to actually make money in sports, in college sports, if you don't have the media dollars in particular behind it. Because that program does everything right. All right? They win. They graduate their wrestlers. They sell out every event that they're in. They go on the road, they're the show. I mean, they sell out in other people's arenas. They are the platinum standard. Yet, despite everything, they still can't make money because that's just the way it is in college athletics if you don't have the mega deals television-wise. Now, I know somebody will argue, well, they're on TV. Yeah, they're on TV 4 or 5 times a year. Football's on 13 times a year. Basketball, you know, take out the ESPN pluses. So basketball was last year had, what, 36 games last year? I think 33 of the 36 were nationally televised. Right? I mean, you know, that's why football gets its line and the interest, because that's how the deal's negotiated, why men's basketball gets the other line, because they're on TV actually more than any other program in the athletic department. And that just tells you how difficult it is to make money in any sport. I mean, women's basketball here was a minus $4 million. Now, some of that stuff's going to change. But my point about the wrestling program is not that, oh, look, they lose money. That's not the point. It's not even remotely close to the point. All right? The point is it tells you that if the platinum standard program, okay, because of media deals and NCAA distributions and things like that, that's how hard it is to make money in a lot of these sports. I mean, if they're not making money, how much money is that sport over there losing? See my point? That's the point of when we talk about wrestling, because they're that good. It just tells you how hard it is.
You're listening.